Golf Smarter number 279, published on April 19, 2011, is brought to you by Audible.com, the Internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, please go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Prepping young golfers for college with Brady Wilson.
This is Golf Smarter. Sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
This is a first in a two-part conversation with Brady Wilson, director of golf at the Classic Club in Palm Desert, California. Welcome to the Golf Smarter podcast, Brady.
Thank you for having me, Fred.
It's great to have you on, and I want to apologize that I promoted that you were the former head coach at Notre Dame, and I'm sorry, that is not the case, but you did.
No, that would be... That would be a tremendous honor, but unfortunately, no, that's not, we didn't do that.
Okay, but you did, you were associated with the University of Notre Dame and their golf program, their golf course?
Yeah, the golf course there, it's a championship golf course, the Warren Golf Course at Notre Dame. It was built in 1999, and I was there for 3 years, and obviously it was the host course for the golf team. So worked closely with both the men's and women's program there, and you know, we hosted the 2005 Central Regional for NCAA Central Regional there. So it was definitely, I was close to those programs and definitely big supporters of those teams and coaches and players, but I was not directly involved with them, no.
But actually, you have a unique perspective of being close enough to the program, but sitting on the outside of it to watch it as their program developed and as they had players coming in and out. So you had, I guess you have an interesting perspective on how those things work. Plus, you've taught a lot of junior golfers, correct?
Correct. Yeah, I've worked with quite a few juniors that have gone on to play college golf. And, I played a year of college golf myself back at Fort Lewis College, a little Division II school in Colorado, and was fortunate enough to be able to coach as an assistant golf coach at a very small NAI school in Michigan, Siena Heights University. So, you know, I have been on both sides of it. I think, you know, my perspective of college golf and junior golfers is I kind of know what college golf coaches, I'm friends with a lot of college golf coaches. You know, Joe Jensen at the University of Wyoming is a really close personal friend and a great person, runs a great program. And, you know, I think I know what college coaches are looking for. You know, they're all a little different, but they're looking for, you know, what type of kids they're looking for, what kind of players they're looking for. And then, you know, different programs are looking for different players, obviously. And then, you know, for junior golfers, I kind of know what they're looking at. You know, the junior generation now is what makes them pick a college, and what makes, you know, what do they need to do to get to be good enough to play at the college level or achieve their goals. So, yeah, it's kind of I'm kind of a hybrid. I'm kind of in the middle there, you know, both sides of it. Maybe, you know, an unofficial promoter of just college golf and junior golf and as a whole.
Well, I think that's a fascinating topic because I know there's so many parents of, you know, who get their kids started playing golf early, and they have visions of you know, being greenside when their kid wins the Masters, you know. And,
yeah.
But here you were playing golf as a kid, and you came up and you said you played a D2 school when you played in college, correct?
Was that correct?
Right. So, but did you have hopes and visions of being able to play on a D1 program?
You know, I really didn't because I came to golf a little bit later. I didn't really dream of playing college golf or professional golf. Or I was a basketball coach and a basketball player, and I played tennis at a pretty high level. Wanted to play tennis in college, so you know I kind of had started at one school, and then when I wound up back in Fort Lewis is in my hometown of Durango, Colorado. When I wound up back there, they didn't have a tennis team, and there was kind of not a lot to do, so I started playing golf and found out I was pretty good at it, and then went out for the team, and I made the team. I didn't make the varsity squad, but I made the team, And you know, it was fun to be a part of it. And you know, now I'm looking at my whole career and where it's gone, and you know, involvement with college golf and involvement with junior golf, and you know, as a PGA professional here, at 35 years old, man, I wish I would have gotten a little bit more out of my college career, because there's nothing like it's so much fun. College golf is so much fun. It's such a rewarding experience, and you know, if kids can go through that experience, it's, you know, whether they go on to play professional golf or they go on to be a doctor or they go on to do whatever, you know, it's a special time. College golf is a special atmosphere.
Mm. I can't imagine talking to anybody who, most people don't, you know, probably don't have regrets in life, but if they do, it's usually about what they didn't do in college.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that's the case for me. If I only studied that in college, or if I only took advantage of that program when I was in college, or if I only went to that college, that's probably quite common. But what is it? And I hate you, by the way.
Okay.
You know, one of those athletes is like, oh, I'll try golf. Hey, I'm good enough. I made the team.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, here's kids who've been playing since they're 6 years old. It's like struggling to get onto a team. What does it take for a high school student to get them prepared, or even for junior high going into high school because they want to play college golf? What do they need to do to get noticed by a college program? Because I can't imagine that there's a lot of not only positions on a varsity team, but scholarships on a team every year. What do they need to do to prep themselves?
Well, that's changed. That's changed over the last 10 to 15 years. I mean, it used to be, you know, playing a few tournaments, write a letter to the coach. Hopefully they came and watched you play in a few events. And, you know, and if he liked you, you win. But it's changed. If depending on the level, of course, you know, I mean, if you want to compete at a high Division I level, you know, you're going to start early, obviously, and you're going to – you need to play in events. You need to play in AJG events. You need to play in FCWT events, you know, Future Collegiate World Tour, and, you know, the AJGA, you know, are rated. And you know, ideally, I mean, if you're really at a high level, you need to try to get in the ranking system to where you're ranked as a junior golfer. That'll ensure you. But, you know, if you're looking for that lower level or just an opportunity, or you're a late starter like myself, you know, I mean, I think the biggest thing that high school golfers can work on to succeed at the next level, and what college coaches are looking for, they need mature kids. They need kids that can handle themselves on a golf course, you know, not get too high, not get too low, you know, controlling emotions. You know, most of the time, if you're good enough to play college golf, it's going to be evident by your golf swing and your stroke and your scores. And, you know, I mean, people are going to know, hey, he's good enough to play college golf. Okay, he shoots the score range, his score average is there, you know. And that's one part of it. But, you know, is that scoring average you know, if you have a 72 scoring average, is that because you can shoot 65 and you can shoot 82 and no one knows what it's going to be? Or are you, you know, are you pretty consistent? You know, I use the and it's changed. I mean, that's changed in junior golf. And you know, this isn't a comment of what's right or wrong or better or worse. But, you know, we just had the Masters and the anniversary of Jack Nicklaus's 86 run. And, you know, and he said the most arrogant, most cocky thing he ever said in his life was on 16 tee. He hit 5-iron, and it was in the air, and he just bent down, picked up the tee, and his son said, you know, be right. And he said, it is. And, you know, and he almost aced that. You know, he knew it was good when he hit it, but he wasn't over emotional. You know, I mean, when you watched that live, you didn't know whether or not that he hit it bad or whether he hit it good, and then until the result happened, you know, he held his emotions in check. I think of Greg Norman coming down the stretch when he was faltering with Nick Faldo in when that big collapse that Norman had. You know, Norman had, you know, you could see his body language, but I mean, he still had his emotions under control. You know, the new generation, the Tiger generation, you know, it's fist pumping, it's throwing the hat, it's, you know, it's a lot of emotions, which is great for the game. You know, positive emotion is always good, but there's negative emotion that comes with slamming your driver in the ground and swearing on TV. And, you know, you know, when you're an emotional person, you're going to have positive emotion, you're going to have negative emotion. But I think curtailing that down into very subtle highs and very subtle lows is something that I think all college golf programs would like to see more of, because, you know, that's just someone that is mature and they're handling their game and they're handling situations that can arise. And God knows, in a round of golf, a lot of things can come up.
Yeah. So it really is, it comes, what you're saying is to get into college, you need a high IQ sometimes, but to get into a college golf program, you almost need a high emotional IQ.
I would think you're going to be more successful with that. And it's character a little bit, I know, but, you know, I mean, it's tough. It's tough for a junior golfer to not get down on themselves. You know, I mean, that's one of the things I think, you know, we're talking about is there's so much negativity sometimes out there with, and you just see the body language and the club drops, and it's just, Bob Rotella, great book, Golf's Not a Game of Perfect. Everyone knows that. I mean, he says in there, the most important shot in golf is the next one. Boy, if you can really teach that to kids, so what, you hit a bad shot? You gotta go hit it again. You might as well not worry about it. It's not like you can get it back.
Right.
So, I think if you can start living forward and moving forward on a golf course, and not living in the past and moving backward, and there's examples of that everywhere. I mean, young Rory. I mean, I'm a big Rory McIlroy fan. And
I definitely want to get into the, we're going all over the place here. I definitely want to get into the McIlroy thing as we progress in this conversation, but I want to stay into the junior golf idea first, and I have a specific question. But actually, this is about the time where I need to say that this episode of the Golf Smarter podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. The Internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. Now, for Golf Smarter listeners who have yet to try out Audible, they want to give you a free audiobook so that you can hear for yourself how much you can gain from having someone read the book to you, and that you can multitask while that's being done. Now, with this offer, all you need to do is go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter, and Audible is AUDIBLE. audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter, and then choose any audiobook from their huge library that includes all the books that are fiction, nonfiction, periodicals, literature. And we want to make a recommendation, and one of the things that I like to do, Brady, is see what you're reading, or what's the last book that you read that could be a great audiobook for someone to read. What's the last thing you've encountered?
Well, I work for Trim Golf Management now. Mm-hmm. Here at Classic Club, Trim Golf has a management contract, and very fortunate to have a great HR team and a great development team back at Trim Golf corporate headquarters in Scottsdale. And one of the books that we're working on kind of as a company right now is The Oz Principle, which is about, organizational accountability, and definitely there's some correlations there you can draw to the golf course. But The Oz Principle is the book that I've been reading lately, and it's good. It's good for all aspects of life.
Okay. Well, checking it out as we speak here, and The Oz Principle. Let's see if I can find that one. It's The Oz Principle. No wonder it's not coming up, because I put it in the email address, but the Oz Principle is available on Audible. And it's called The Oz Principle: Getting Results Through Individual and Organizational Accountability. So you're saying this is a company-wide assignment for everyone to read for management?
We had a accountability training at our management conference. Mm-hmm. And then, so far, our upper tier management have all gone through it. Now they're starting to. We've obviously started to take that down to our individual properties. And I'm involved in Trim Golf's Leader Program, which is kind of their, hopefully a development program for their future leaders in their company. And this is one of our required readings. So we've been going through it. We've been kind of working through it as a company for at least a year now. So it's been really good. It's a nice look in the mirror to be honest with you. And then it's a nice, and then it's a nice look around you, and what kind of culture that you want to set. Your property.
Well, and your company, whatever company you work for, this is probably gonna give you some insights to not only yourself but to what it's like to work for someone. So it's again the Oz Principle: Getting Results Through Individual and Organizational Accountability by Roger Connors, Tom Smith, and Craig Hickman, and it's narrated by Wayne Shepherd. It's over 8 hours long, so that would be a great book to do as your first audiobook if you're going to try it again. To try the free audiobook, any book you'd like of your choice, but you can do the Oz Principle if you'd like, go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter. Thanks for the recommendation. I appreciate it. No problem. So, now, okay, we're going to get to McIlroy, I promise. But I do want to know, like, a high school player, should they be, if they want to be noticed, you were talking about being ranked, should they be playing on the high school team, or should they be out on the junior golf circuit competing at that level to try to be noticed by colleges?
You know, it's a great question. I know tennis has fought this. In you know, high level tennis participants in high school, you know, there's some college coaches out there that I know have told some high-level junior tennis players, you know, you're not getting any better playing and just beating up on really bad high school tennis players. You know, you need to go out and play in, you know, junior, kind of a junior tournament circuit. Yeah, that's out there. I think because for the majority of the country, junior golf tournaments and the tournament series and the events that they need to play in, the majority of those are during the summer, okay? The kids are out of school, they're not missing school, and you know, usually summer months down south you get better rates at golf courses for junior events, and you know, I know that takes a factor of where those junior events go. So
sure.
You know, majority of the junior events are going to be through the summer, and then maybe a little bit during the Christmas break in warm weather climates. So you know, high school golf I think is still very viable. I think going out and being the best player on your high school team or the second best player and playing in state championships, and you know, you have a chance to be a team in a team environment, but you also have a chance to, you know, to place as an individual, a medalist at you know, I think saying you're a state champion at you know, a Michigan state champion or Indiana state champion or a, you know, Colorado state champion or, you know, Southern California state champion, I think being able to say that on your college resume is still a very impressive thing. So
sure.
I think high school golf is still very strong, very viable. I'd keep an eye on it though. I mean, I think it is something that could change. You know, if you're a real premier high school, you know, I mean, Paula Kramer came out of high school and, you know, went to LPGA, and you know, there's been a couple other success stories, young kids coming out and doing that. You know, golf's gotten so global that, you know, it's a little different process overseas. So it seems like, you know, I mean, Rory is 21. I know we're going to talk to him, but he's only 21. It seems like he's been on tour for 4 or 5 years now. You know what I mean? So, you know, it's kind of one of those deals where I still think high school golf is very viable. And, you know, but you still need to play in those summer events and build up your credibility and your ranking and your score average and all those things.
My son, my younger son, he wrestled in high school for 4 years, and I wasn't familiar with that sport at all. And you think of wrestling as an individual sport, like you think of golf. I was shocked at how important the team element was on the wrestling team. And what kind of value, because you mentioned, you know, what it's like to be on a team, learn to be what's on a team, you know, and so for golf, again, you think of it as an individual sport. You're out there playing against yourself. But what kind of value does participating on a team level in golf do for you when you're moving forward through, you know, college and, you know, with wrestling once you've finished college, if you even get to wrestle in college, if you even want to do that, you're pretty much done. But with golf, obviously, there's still ways to go that you can become a professional. Does the team element add that much to it?
I think absolutely. Mm. And I think you're right in asking that question. I think it's something that people don't really understand. They think of golf as a very individual sport. I got a couple examples for you that are pretty obvious, but look how passionate the players are about the Ryder Cup and the President's Cup and the Solheim Cup. Look how passionate they are about that. Yeah. That's a team environment. Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, team golf is special. And I tell you the reason they're special is, you know, I get to spend some time with the University of Wyoming when they were down here. They host their event here. And again, like I said, friends with Coach Jensen, we went to dinner one night. And I told him when we were walking out of dinner that night, I said, you know, this is what I miss about coaching. Because I used to coach basketball at the college level. I said, this is what I miss about coaching. I miss this camaraderie, you know, sitting around here and the five, you know, you got five guys that went out and played golf. And it's just, you know, I mean, it's a little different, but I mean, it's just like five, it's just like your foursome that you go play golf with during the day and you go into the 19th hole afterwards and have a beer and recount some of the good shots and some of the bad shots. They're doing the same thing in college golf, you know, and if you think about it, when we talked earlier about, you know, emotions and controlling, not getting too high, not getting too low, I tell you what, no one keeps you more centered than your teammates. You know what I mean? They're not going to let you get too high. You know, the other thing is, you know, where do you turn when you need a little pick-me-up, right? You turn to your friends. You turn to, you know, if you're struggling, you're going to turn, and you got somebody there in college golf. You know, you got somebody there, that whether it's with your golf game or problems with your girlfriend or whatever, you got somebody there to go to, you know. And I've seen it very divisive, too. If you got a team of guys that don't get along or girls that don't get along, you know, you know, here's a truth statement, right? Our golf games usually mirror our personal lives, right? So, you know, if you have a good team atmosphere, whether you're a girls' team or a guys' team or a college team or a high school team, you know, you're going to get better performance on the golf course out of those players than if it's divisive and, you know, everyone's in it for themselves and no one's, you know. So building that camaraderie is a very important part. And, you know, that, taking it back to the Ryder Cup, I mean, I think that's why years and years and years when the Americans were a more talented team, but the European teams were closer knit. That's why I think the European teams were so strong. And, you know, our recent success in the Ryder Cup with, you know, like the Zinger team, you know, that team was a very close-knit team. You know, the Crenshaw team at Brookline, that was a very close-knit team. They, you know, and it, so – you know, the team element of golf is really neat. It's really neat. It's really rare. Not a lot of people are aware of it, as you know, but it's really neat. It's something special, you know, and that's, we talked earlier about college regrets. I mean, that's what I miss about coaching basketball. That's what I miss about, you know, my college career, as brief as it was, is, you know, that just kind of that camaraderie, that atmosphere.
You know, because golf, especially professional golf, these guys are out trying to earn a paycheck. That's what gets them going from one place to the next. And
right.
And team golf, you say they're so passionate about it. Well, that's because it's not an ongoing thing. It's not like a traveling basketball team. Do you
right.
think there could be a place for professional team golf?
You know.
Or is it just doing it once every other year is like, that's enough? And now it's coming to the Olympics, right?
Yeah, yeah. You know, I there might be something out there. I mean, there's, you know, yeah, you know, there might be. I never really thought about that. There might be. I mean, I know there's different little mini kind of tours that have tried different things, and you know, I know that tennis tried that, right? The mm-hmm. professional team tennis tried that. And, you know, it had a little run. I don't know. I don't know because the PGA Tour and the LPGA Tour are so popular
yeah.
with
and so
golfers.
Strong.
You know, I don't see the best players in the world going, you know what, I don't want to play individual golf. I'm going to go play team golf.
Yeah, that's a good point. Good point.
So I don't know if the quality of play would be as good. But, you know, it is special. I think that's where college golf has its niche. You know, I mean, I think, hey, that's something that college golf has that professional golf doesn't, right? College
yeah.
basketball versus NBA. You know, there's something special about playing in halves and the NCAA tournament versus seven game series and four quarters, you know? So I think that's what separates college golf and makes it makes it unique.
Yeah, good point. It kind of like why MLS soccer will never have the power that the European soccer has, just because the best players aren't coming to the United States to play soccer. You know,
right?
So now let's get to Rory McIlroy and his meltdown at the Masters recently. So interesting. I mean, here's a kid who he led for 63 holes, and then the last nine holes. You know, I mean, he picked the wrong 63 to be the leader of. But
right.
He's so young. Yeah, he's been on the tour for a while, but he's still so young. And golf, you have to have a high emotional IQ. You have to understand the emotions and the mental game. Is it an issue that so many young kids that are technically proficient but don't have the emotional wherewithal to last and hold up? Is that what happened with Rory? He's just too young to hang on?
I don't know
about
that.
From your perspective?
Here's my perspective on the Rory deal, first off and foremost, and this might be a little harsh. This might be the basketball coach in me. You know, I've heard everybody for the last week talk about how classy he handled himself, and he did. But I hate the fact that people act like they're surprised. Okay, I think that he's supposed to handle himself that way. Okay, so yes, he handled himself very classily and with honor, and that's how he was supposed to handle himself after that. However, I'm a big fan of Rory, and I think that, you know, watching that closely. Listen, it's very easy to talk about it when none of us have been standing on 10T on Sunday at Augusta, okay? And there's a very select group that have been there, so they probably are more qualified to comment on it than anyone. But if you're asking my opinion, and I watched it very closely, you know, he was not hitting the types of shots that he'd been hitting all week, starting on the front nine. He kind of survived it a little bit, but, you know, I mean, he caught the one thin and hit the bunker and, you know, on two, and, you know, he made par on two, which is kind of it's like a half a bogey. And, you know, he wasn't hitting it close. He wasn't swinging with confidence, you know, and he was one of the few guys that didn't have his, you know, everyone travels with their swing coach now, and his swing coach was back in Ireland and doesn't travel. And, you know, it kind of felt like he was a little bit on his own there. And I think it got very lonely for him. And then when he, you know, the meltdown on 10 is where it really collapsed. You know, you kind of make the turn after nine. It didn't go as way he wanted. He's right there. You know what, you know, and we've all made the turn, right? The turn, it's a fresh nine. That nine's behind you. You know, we should be doing that with every shot. We should be doing that with every hole. But for some reason, when you turn off the front nine and go to the back nine, it's like, okay, new life, all right?
Yep.
Well, you know, that was with one swing completely taken out of his sails, you know, and, you know, he got aggressive, hit the tree. You know, I mean, there was just a, you know, if you went back and asked him, I bet you he would say that hole went really fast. Like, you know,
interesting.
And I think when things start to go wrong on a golf course, we've all been there, they happen really fast. Things speed up. And I think the best thing that he could have done would have just, I mean, he's in the last group. I mean, it's not like pace of play is an issue. I mean, CBS isn't going to turn off the TV if he's slow. Slow down, you know, and, you know, you're standing between two houses. Okay, how can I maybe have a putt at par and make no worse than a bogey and just get out of this hole, you know? And instead, things got a little hairy and he wound up making triple, you know, and then from there, it was just, he was done, you know, and the short putt on 11, the short putt on 12, and then on 13T, I thought he was going to cry, you know, and I felt so
bad
for him.
When he buried his head in his arms?
Yeah, I thought he was crying. I thought he was crying on the golf course. You know, and if you noticed, CBS didn't turn back to him until 18,
right,
when he was putting out. And I thought that was nice of CBS because, I mean, you don't want to just watch somebody.
Yeah, but it's still television. We love to watch train wrecks on television. That's why reality TV is going so well. It's kind of surprising they didn't go back to beat him up on it. You know,
well, they would have stayed on him if he was competitive in the towards the end. But he was he was done at that point. He wasn't going to be a factor in the outcome. So,
Yeah,
you know,
and probably, the back nine.
And there were so many people involved.
Well,
there,
right, and the back nine was such great television.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just such an argument to why watching golf on television is so much better than being there live, because you just don't miss a shot. And it was so compelling. That back nine was some of the greatest television I've ever seen, let alone a great Masters. It was remarkable.
But I am proud of the way he handled himself, and he talked about, hey, this will make me stronger, and I'll be back, and you know, and all that. And, I'm proud of the way he handled himself, but I'm proud of the way he handled him that he did what he was supposed to do. Kind of how I would say.
Well, he said something in the post-game interview that actually intrigued me, but we've kind of run out of time. So I'd like to ask you a favor, because this is a regular show. We do these interviews for about 30 minutes, and then on the second weeks, we have our Golf Smarter for Members Only episodes, and those sometimes go 30 minutes, and sometimes they go an hour. So can we continue this conversation, but make it a members only? Do you mind if you stick around for a little bit longer?
No problem.
All right. So then for our listeners, next week, part two of our conversation with Brady Wilson. Stay tuned. Well, coming up next for members only, Brady and I continue talking about how the younger players on the tour may be more apt to collapse in the final round of a major, and the unique business model of the Classic Course, former host of the Bob Hope Classic. To make sure you hear next week's conversation and get a new episode of Golf Smarter every week, join Golf Smarter for members only for only $15 at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.